show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Full house here. Michael Engel and Jeff Hurd. Jeff's still trying to get that house sold, but has broken away from that to
I've spent some time here. I've got the house sold. I'm just trying to buy a new one now.
Oh, I thought you were having a price war with the people buying your house.
No, nope, that's this is with me trying to buy a house.
Oh, well, that's fun too. So, well, good luck with that, Mr. Hurd. Now, Michael Engel, this is actually the second attempt we've made at this show today, and we had some problems with the recorder, but we were talking about you were very excited last week, and we're getting ready. We're recording right before the All-Star Game's about to take place. And, Michael Engel, we were talking about how excited you were last week because the Royals did do something that they haven't done since, I believe it was 1988, correct?
Well, when they made the announcement of the All-Star team, the Royals got two players on, which that hadn't happened since 2003. And then within the last week, they've added Greg Holland. And as we're recording, they just announced all three, Alex Gordon, Sal Perez, and Greg Holland. So that was pretty cool to see three guys out there from the Royals when, you know, the last time that happened was 1988. And one of those guys was Curt Stillwell, which, you know, that's kind of one of those guys that you look back and you realize he was an all-star. So I think this counts a little better.
Yeah, I think this will be three guys we'll hear for a long time. But Jeff wasn't here last week, and he didn't get a chance to hear this. But this is a good recap of 20-second recap of last week's beginning.
Johnson, I'm gonna Alex, two! We got two! Sal and Gordon. Awesome. That's awesome. Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy about that. Holland's cool and all, but two, that's awesome. That's very cool. All right. Well, I'm psyched now. Let's do this.
And Mike, to your credit, my fiance agreed with you. I didn't listen to my co-host in the editing process, and I shouldn't have put the commercial in there. I should have went right into the open, and she agreed with you. So you can take that to heart, too. But Mike was very excited. Last week's episode was brought to you by the number two and the words awesome and so awesome and cool.
It was brought to you by the number two with four exclamation points.
Yeah, it was quite the thing. It Mike was really excited about the number two.
Two.
So.
Two.
Yeah. Two. And he was very.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy about that.
And the whole show was just
awesome. That's awesome.
So there you go.
We got like a soundboard now.
Yes, I've been working really hard on this soundboard, so I'm finally getting some nice pieces together. And last week's episode, I'm probably going to go through and edit a lot out of because there was so much good. But now that we're here, it's the All-Star break. You know, I'm to the point now, and I'm not usually like this, and maybe it's because I had season tickets and I couldn't bring myself to think this way because there was no way I would be willing to go. Oh, actually, let me back up. I'm sorry. Before we start talking about how pathetic the Royals are right now again, we do need to give a shout-out to Randy Watt, R-A-N-D-Y-W-A-T-T, and Andrew McGregor, which is ADM McGregor, I think it is. AD McGregor, I believe, is his handle. I don't have it in front of me. But both of them will be winning $10 to Kelly's. And Andrew, if you would like to send me your address, I know you live in Illinois, but if you plan on coming to Kansas City at any time, let me know before you come, and I'll make sure you have $10 to Kelly's.
I think it's still Indiana.
It is still Indiana, and I'm still trying to move him to Illinois. So there you go.
Yeah.
And Randy Watt has already sent me his address, so I will be getting that out to him sometime when I remember to buy stamps. So there's that. And then we do have a couple of mailbags today. I think I can find them both. But let's talk a little bit about the Royals. You know, this year I'm kind of to a point where I'm just like, I'm enjoying baseball. You know, I love baseball. And I'm just not going to let the fact that the Royals are going to be uncompetitive in the second half get me down. And I just feel like after they were so good, then they were bad, and then they were good again. Jeff bought back in, and now they're bad again. And I just don't know how you buy into the second half, even though you have this great thing with three Royals All-Stars. Jeff, are you still in or are you back out?
You know, it's tough. I think I'm back out, and if I'm being honest, I was probably always a little bit more out than in. It's just like, you know, it's tough because you find yourself in a situation where you're a fan of the team. We've talked about this a lot on Twitter. You want them to do well. You want this to be the year, but we all know, and we've all talked about it ad nauseum, talked about it a lot on this show, that the better likelihood is that the Royals will not take that massive step forward a la Rays 2008, possibly the Pirates this year, that type of a massive step forward with this administration in control. And, you know, there's been lots of argument I saw lately, especially today, how far up the chain that goes. Does it stop at Yost? Is he the problem? Is it Dayton Moore? Is it David Glass? I mean, it's kind of all encompassing of a singular problem. But to answer your question, I'm kind of off the train simply because I've just been burned too many times, like most Royals fans are, and I'm still going to root for them. I'm not saying that I want them to lose or anything, but I don't know, being 6 games under .500, and I think it's like 8.5 games back now at the break, I don't know that I see the Royals making that kind of a charge. You know, I've been there too many times where I say, hey, you know, the Rockies, they won 21 out of 22 games on the way to the World Series in 07. Why not us? You know, it's got to be somebody, right? Somebody always does something like that. Why not the Royals? Why can't it be the Royals? Well, it just never is, and they haven't given you or us any indication this year beyond a really good couple stretches, but it's more than just 17-10 or a 16-11 stretch. It needs to be more than that. It needs to be rip off 8-10 straight wins. I mean, if they come right out of the break and rip off 10 straight wins, then who knows? Maybe I'll be brought back. But they haven't really shown that they're the team that's going to do that. So until they do, I don't know how anybody can really get back on the train for this team. You know, at this point, I'm never going to pick the Royals to win more than 78 games in a season again until they actually do it. You know, I mean, it's just, it's quite remarkable. Everything they've done and as far as they've come, then this is as far as they've gone. I mean, in what is it, 7.5 years now we've been doing this. So with Dayton Moore anyway, it's a sad situation to say that I'm probably off the train at this point, but you know, just like any fan, you can come, not that I will ever stop rooting or paying attention for the Royals, but off the train of thinking they can make a run at this thing.
And I'm not saying that anybody should be off the train. I'm not saying you should quit rooting for the Royals. I'm going to root for them every game. I'm going to watch most games that I'm home for. You know, it's just what I do. I'm just not going to get my hopes up that this team can be more than what they are. Kind of like what you're saying. I mean, this team has the talent like that Rockies team to go 21-22, but I just don't think they have. I don't think they had the leadership for it. He's never shown that he could do it before in Milwaukee or anywhere else. And the development's been so bad, you're not going to have anybody that's just going to come up in September and just rake or come in and be such a pitcher that you can really get the job done. And I don't think, you know, honestly, I'm deathly afraid right now because Dayton Moore only has 2 years left on his deal, and he may go out and trade the entire farm system to make a run this year. You know, you think the Will Myers trade was bad. He might do something real crazy just to save his job, because what's he have to lose at this point? Mike, how are you feeling about it? What are you seeing?
Well, July was looking like a tough month anyway. They were coming into the month of July playing Cleveland, who's been very good all year. They went, they played Oakland, who's been good all year. Played the Yankees, who swept them last time. Then back against Cleveland, and they didn't do very well. And so now, after the All-Star break, they're going to be facing Detroit for 3 games, and then Baltimore for 4. And you know, Detroit obviously is the class of the AL Central. Baltimore has been pretty good the last year and a half. You know, those are 7 games right off you know, right out of the break where, you know, the Royals have to do something. They almost have to win like five of those seven games to give anybody any sort of hope. You know, once they get past those, I mean, they've got the White Sox and the Twins right after, so those are two pretty weak teams. But it's if they come out and they're 3-4, it's pretty much done. I mean, you're going to know after this next homestand, you know, where the Royals stand. And they've got about a week from Friday to figure out if they're going to be buyers and try to go for it or sellers. And that's going to be kind of the sign. They're going to end up being a team that, you know, Irvin Santana, his fate is going to be determined by the next seven games the Royals play. So that's going to be what the you have to look out for. I think the Royals as a team, you know, you look at what the A's did last year. Yeah, they were in a similar position, but they also came out and they led the league in scoring from the All-Star break to the rest of the year. And that's how they did it. And they did it with really good pitching on top of that. So everything clicked for the last, you know, 2.5 months of the season. The Royals just, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that. I mean, they've got four players who are playing regularly who are above league average right now. And that's just not enough. I mean, you're looking at, you know, over half of your lineup are below average hitters. And they don't have the type of approach that can make up for some of that stuff. You know, there's the power problem that's been an issue all year. You know, you can get around that if you walk, if you can get on base, if you have, you know, a lot of doubles, but the Royals don't have any of that. You know, they're pretty much relying on stringing five or six hits together, getting three runs, you know, maybe tacking on a run later and getting to that magic four run total, and that's where they get some of those wins. If they don't do that, you know, they don't win generally. That's just how it is. If they don't score four runs, they pretty much have to be perfect at on the mound, and that hasn't happened either. So you look at the pieces that are there, it's really difficult to see where this team is going to get it from. It's like you said, there's nobody who's going to come up from the minors who's going to be pushing them. If anything, they've already got that guy, and it's David Lowe. And if David Lowe is the spark plug for your offense has a problem. Nothing against David Lowe. Perfectly fine player, but he's not a difference maker. He's a very, very good role player. He's not going to be a guy who takes the league by storm. So that's where they're kind of running into trouble. They don't have anything. What they really have to do is Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Alex Gordon, Billy Butler, Sal Perez. They have to be at their absolute peak. They have to be exactly what you expect them to be. Butler has to be, you know, the 29 homer guy from last year. Gordon has to be his the guy that we saw for the first 2 months of the year. Perez has to hit with more power. Moustakas has to be the guy who opened the first half last year with like 12 homers. Everybody's got to be at their peak and as good as they can be. And banking on that is a risky proposition. The odds really are not in their favor.
And you know what the worst part is that you pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Mike, saying these next seven games that the Royals play after the break are going to decide the fate of someone like Irvin Santana and basically the Royals season, really. And it always seems, you know, you talk about the Royals have the White Sox coming up as an opponent in a series after the break. Well, the White Sox are a terrible team this year. They're just not good. And every time the Royals are in a position where you say, okay, they need to win, they need to sweep a series, they need to take care of business, beating up on a team that they're more talented than and clearly better than. And every time you get in that situation, or the Royals get in that situation, it seems like they fail. I mean, it even happened earlier in the season after the Royals had that pretty good stretch in June after the awful May. They were kind of coming back down to earth, and they had a series against the White Sox. I think it might have been at home even. I can't remember off the top of my head. And they lost 2 out of 3. And they're a better team than the White Sox. And it's just, yep. It's a situation where they always – you know, and you, it was almost a bigger theme last year with the Our Time motto and all that stuff that kind of went wrong and everything. And it just was it, people kept asking, oh, is it too much pressure? Can they handle the pressure? Are they not handling it well? Well, it seems like it's been an organizational paradigm, it seems, for the last 25 years, 25-plus years, that none of them, no Royals players, just the organization itself cannot handle expectations or pressure. And fact of the matter is, if they come out of the break and maybe they have they play Cleveland right out of the break, is that right? Who do they play?
They start out against Detroit, and then it's Baltimore.
Against Detroit. Yeah. Detroit and Baltimore. So, yeah, say they win 5 out of 2 there, and they're 5 out of 7 there. They go 5 and 2. So that puts them at, what, 48 and 51, right?
Yeah.
And then if they were to, is it the White Sox after that? I don't have the schedule in front of me. So
yeah, White Sox for 3 and then Twins for 3.
So. Yeah, so that's 6 games right there. So that would be big time.
You kind of have to go 11 and 2.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So, I mean, but this is just it. You know, the Royals are going to go, they're probably going to go 5-2 against the Tigers and the Orioles and make us think, you know what, maybe they're back in this. They got 6 games against teams they should beat. And they're going to go 1-5 and fall flat on their face again. But they did just enough to not trade Santana and not get anything for him and keep him to ride out the season getting 78 wins or whatever. It's just, it happens. I mean, you could almost write the script. It happens every year.
And I'm on board with all that. I really don't have any disagreement whatsoever. And, you know, I think that really sums up where we're at. We're not the kind of show that does first half awards, and I don't know that anybody deserves one. What we are going to do is an extended mailbag. Oh, I did want to say, on the subject of Lowe and him not being a spark plug, what he is, though, and I think this is really important, is he seems to be better than a 4A player.
Yeah.
If you'd have gotten the production mm-hmm. that you're getting out of him, out of Keela or Ross Glode, or the list goes on, if any of those guys would have been David Lowe good, this whole team would be different right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's just... it's crazy to think of how good he has been for the Royals coming really – I mean, nobody really thought he had a place. And really, he probably wasn't ready 3 years ago. He might have been ready last year. Will Myers was definitely ready last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think about the Francoeur deal, and it might have been all right in the first couple of years because it gave time for both Will and Lowe to get healthy. Granted, you wish you would have seen both of them up last year instead of Francoeur.
Yeah, I mean, I just wrote a thing posted this morning on Kings of Kauffman about Lowe because he's been really good, and it's pretty remarkable considering that he made it to Omaha in 2010. So he's been sitting in AAA for the majority of the last 4 seasons, and he's only now, you know, he's 27 years old. He's only now getting any shot at a full-time thing. You know, you go back to 2010, the Royals, they had just moved Alex Gordon to the outfield and brought him back at the end of the year. Then in 2011, they signed Melky Cabrera, they signed Jeff Francoeur, they traded for Lorenzo Cain. You had Jerrod Dyson, who had kind of jumped out as kind of a guy that they wanted to get a look at. You still had Mitch Meyer around, who might have had a shot at some extra playing time. And then Will Myers moved from catcher to the outfield, and just like that, you know, David Lowe at the start of 2010 looked like maybe a guy who could get a look at 24 years old, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's got 5 or 6 other outfielders that he's got to contend with, and, you know, he just tools-wise, you know, he's probably behind any and all of those guys. But what he offers is he's really balanced. You know, there's the phrase, jack of all trades, master of none. And that's pretty much what he is. He can hit pretty well, but he's not going to be, you know, outstanding. He's not going to contend for a batting title. He's got some power. You know, he could hit probably 10 homers a year and, you know, 20 to 30 doubles, and that's okay. He's like a number 8, number 9 guy, number 7 even. But he's not going to be a guy who's going to bust out and hit 25 just out of nowhere. He's got some speed, but he's probably not going to be an elite base stealer. He's got a good arm, but he's not Jeff Francoeur's arm or Alex Gordon's. You know, he's kind of there in everything. He's about, you know, right down the middle every single tool you could evaluate. So I think that's part of why the Royals overlooked him for so long and kind of left him in Omaha, because he just kind of faded in. He floated, for lack of a better term, and nothing really stood out for them to bank on. But now you look at him, you know, depending on who you look at, Baseball Reference has him at 1.7 wins above replacement this year, and he only came up in the middle of May. So he's been around for 2 months, and he's put up that kind of production. That's better than a lot of guys, you know, guys who are playing tonight. It's better than Torii Hunter. He's right around, some pretty significant names, and he goes overlooked still now, but at the same time, he is 27, and this is pretty much as good as he's going to be. And that's okay. I mean, if the Royals had seven guys who were hitting at above average levels, if they were, in the middle of the pack home run wise, David Lowe would be a really, really nice player to have on this team because he just fits that spot, and they can just set him out there. They don't have to rely on him, and anything that he chips in is a bonus. As it is, he's hitting, fifth or sixth some nights, and that's just not ideal for anybody. But, I mean, you're right. He's more than a 4A player. I always kind of pictured him as Mitch Meyer light. But he's better than that. I think he's come pretty close to David DeJesus, who is a similar type of player. DeJesus had a lot more time in the majors at Lowe's age and was a lot more proven. But, I mean, that might be it. That might be as good as he is, and that's still okay. Average players have a lot of value, and David Lowe is perfectly average.
And with that, I think we're going to move to the mailbag. We got a couple of things. We don't have a lot to talk about because we're at the break, and we had a pretty good show last week that talked about going into the All-Star game, and we've covered kind of what the team's doing. Got two pretty long emails this week, and I'm going to cover
both of them
pretty complete. Because they actually do bring up some things that we don't necessarily talk about. But you can always send us an email, KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Your emails are worth $10 to Kelly's until I run out, as long as they get read on the air, or I deem them worthy of $10 to Kelly's. So we got one this week from a newer Royals fan, but she's come on like gangbusters, and that's Audra Marvin. You can follow her on Twitter at Audra_Marvin. She says, "Hey guys," or "Hey Troy," I guess. Not sure anyone else is actually reading this. What she doesn't realize is this actually goes out to our email group, which is you and which is the three of us plus David Leskey, because David Leskey's funny and he adds a lot to our conversations. She says, "Anyone else reading this? Engel, you there?" Well, if so, I didn't want to say hi to you anyway, so again, I say, "Hey, Troy." So she obviously has heard a lot of episodes where Jeff hasn't been in.
Right.
So now that's how the way.
Where's my greetings there on the email?
Yeah, she didn't want to talk to you either, apparently. So she brings up some baseball-specific questions as well as because she feels that she's still in the explain the basics to me stage. And she doesn't have any baseball specific questions because she's still in the explain the basics to me stage, and that would be a wonderful waste of time on the podcast, so we won't go there. I think that's every podcast that we've done ever. So I don't know that it'd be a waste of time. I think it's pretty much what we do. She did have some questions about the podcast and how it started and stuff like that. And since this, if you've followed the podcast since episode one, you can probably jump ahead 2 minutes. A lot of this is about the podcast, and if you don't care about podcast history, then you can bump forward. But she asked,
also, what's wrong with you?
What do you mean?
If they don't care about podcast history,
right. She asked how long it's been going on. We're into our third year now. We celebrated our second birthday in March. March or April, and was it just me in the beginning? It was supposed to be. It was going to be me and a plethora of co-hosts, but before I ever started, Mike had told me that I wasn't good enough to write for Kings of Kaufman, but
hey,
that he would be interested in doing a podcast with me.
Let me put a spin on that.
I'm not a very good writer. I've said that on here a lot. Not a very good writer,
but
so I'm fine with that.
I knew that Troy had done some stuff talking to three guys in a garage. I knew that he had done some other like TV segments and stuff where people asked him about the costume. I knew he could talk about baseball. I knew the ideas were there. He just, when he's typing, Troy, needs an editor.
Right, and I do, and I totally do. I actually have a couple of friends that I send stuff to, but before I do, the few posts that I do throughout the year. And so it was Mike and I to start off, and we had a studio in Kansas City that we paid for, and it was through some great gentlemen, from the Big Dumb Fun Show, and you can find them at BigDumbFunShow.com. They do a show on Monday nights live from 7 to 10. We had their studio on Sundays, and we, you know, we tried to do like a radio-ready show because that's where I expected to go with this. And then, like Mike had said, I'd been on with Three Guys in a Garage, and I really kind of – they had done it that way, and then they bought time on 1510 and eventually got picked up by 810. And I kind of envisioned us that way, and – unfortunately, the world doesn't always go the way you envision it, and so that's never panned out completely, you could say. I mean, it's panned out somewhat, but we kind of like doing it the podcast way. She also asked, were there others involved who aren't anymore? We've had a lot of guest hosts in the past that we had.
We started out, we were talking with we did our first show, just two of us, and then after that, for like the next three, we were with Brian McGannon.
Yep, Brian was a part of it, and there was shows that I couldn't – we did it every week regardless of who was there,
yep,
because we had the studio, and we just did. There was actually a point where Mike had done more shows than I had, and that was because I had roller derby and some other stuff going on, and so we did it every week regardless. And, of course, I was living in KC at the time. But McGannon, you know, he was too busy for a permanent fit. We kind of had envisioned kind of the role that Jeff has with him. And then Jeff came on as a co-host. He was supposed to be our football guy. We never kind of got into the football arena like we had planned because the Chiefs were really bad. And we just found out our listeners really didn't care to deal with Chiefs. So we've kept it pretty Royals, and occasionally I'll just throw in some Chiefs stuff. Jeff joined us at that point, was on a couple more shows. He wanted to be on the Jason Park show. We granted him that, and he's been a part. And then our first birthday came, and we'd had Chris Kambler on a couple of times. Ooh, I just had something drop. Hang on.
Uh-oh.
Oh, here we go with our internet again.
Really?
Yep. Hang tight. Jeff, are you there? We've definitely dropped Jeff. So I'll watch this and see. I'll be so happy when I move. Anyways, hopefully we get Jeff back here in a second. But I'll keep going. Anyways, there was Jeff and Chris Kambler, who was Fake Ned Yost, and we had our first birthday, and Mike and I were standing together at the birthday, and we said, you know what, this show really could go with four people, and it'd be fine. And at that point, we decided that we were going to go forward putting an offer out to Kambler and Jeff Herr to make $0 like we were and do this ridiculous podcast. And so they accepted the offer. Eventually, we moved into Kambler's man cave. He had some personal issues, couldn't do the man cave anymore. Didn't give us a lot of notice. We moved out. Did it on Google Hangouts for a while. Those shows are still up at youtube.com/RoyalManReport. Of course, that's the name of the show originally because it was going to be my show, and I was going to have all these guest hosts. And then as the show grew, we went on to 1510 for a while on some money that was paid for by the Historical Society. Jeff Logan joined the show. We were on 1510. It was fun. It never really had the feel of the podcast, though. And once we left there, we decided we wanted to stay with the Kansas City Baseball Vault name. Kept that, and then, like I said, Kambler left the show eventually. We went online, Google Hangouts, and then I learned how to record with Skype and an app called Pamela, and I edit with Audacity, and I've always edited with Audacity, but at that point, it was just me. In the process there, in the first part of the first year, brings her next question, which is, how did Kelly's get involved? We had a good friend who's been part of the show off and on named Patty Casey. You can follow him on Twitter at Patty Casey.
Good old Patty.
Great man. He's a great human being. He's the barman at Harry's in Westport, and he was a great friend of the podcast. He helped us out a bunch with getting connected in some places. And he knew the people. He knew that Harry's wasn't going to be a fit, but he knew that it would work at Kelly's, or he thought so. There were some great Royals fans, Ezra and Chris Pione, who runs the Kelly's account now, at Kelly's Bar KC. They got involved with us, paid us just enough money to break even. And really, that now, because we don't have the studio, we get a little bit ahead. But that's how they got involved. And Mitch Kelly and Kyle Kelly and Colleen and Pat are all amazing human beings. And Mike's met them briefly.
Yep.
But to give you an idea of how awesome the Kellys are, we're having our wedding reception there, and they're not charging us anything for the building. They're going to shut Kelly's down at 6 o'clock on Sunday on December 15th, and we're going to party like no other there, and they're going to have a cash bar for us.
We're going to party like a bunch of 30-year-olds.
We are, and it's going to be a lot of fun, except for my fiance's 25, and so are most of her friends. So I guess we'll be...
A bunch of people in their 30s and some in their mid-20s.
But it's going to be a lot of fun, and they've been really good to us, and they're amazing people. And
it's an
Kansas
awesome
City's
bar.
And Kansas City's very lucky to have Kelly's. And, you know, some people get all bent out of shape about the charge on the weekends, which that money goes to the band. And apparently for all the people that complain about it, every time that I ever went by there on a Friday or Saturday night, there was a line looped around the block to get into Kelly's, especially after America's Grill went away, or America's Pub, whatever it was, went away. That place was weird. But they've been – and then she asked what our listenership is. It really varies. When I have guests on, which we used to do on a pretty regular basis, we can have a ton of listeners, but I don't want to give out specific numbers because we have to keep those a little close. But
that's proprietary information.
It is. But when we don't have guests, we have kind of our regular group, and there's actually quite a few in that regular group as well.
We used to have a chat room going a lot when we were going more live, and we would have – a few dozen people in there chatting with us at the same time as a regular group. And, we had the running jokes. Martin Steele, if you're listening out there, Spit Cup all the way, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's how Spit Cup came to be in our commercials and stuff. And we've had other sponsors. We've had an ice cream place that's no longer in business.
Right.
And we had she knew she was having troubles. It was kind of a last-ditch effort for her to get some ground-level marketing at an inexpensive rate, which your business can, too, if you own a business.
Yeah, real easy.
And Freebirds came in, and we helped to generate them a lot of attention on Twitter and got them a few thousand people out to their openings and stuff, and they were pretty pleased with us. But it was a short-term deal, and that's what they won, and that's what they got. So Kelly's has always been there for us, and they continue to make this show possible because, unfortunately, this show does cost money, and they've been very good to us.
Bandwidth ain't cheap. But we've also had out-of-the-park baseball helped us out with some stuff.
I can't forget about
them. The Greenland Armor, they didn't really sponsor us, but they helped put us up, and we got to hold the event where we showed Major League on one of their screens one night, and that was really cool for them to give us that opportunity, and it was a really good deal for the people who came out and had a really good turnout, and we had a little Skype conversation with Jason Adam while he was in Arizona, so it was pretty cool.
This is totally off topic, but man, if I had my camera right now, this would be a cute emergency. My cat likes to watch TV, and especially when I'm flipping through windows, she really likes the different windows and stuff, the baby kitten we have, and she has fallen asleep like between the TV and the front of the TV stand, I guess, for lack of a better term. It's not really a TV stand, but that's what we use it for, and she's just like out cold on a pack of cigarettes. It's pretty funny. So, but anyways, I digress. Continuing with Audra's email, I do want to let you know a couple of things. I like the podcast for one. Well, we're glad to hear that because we hope people like the podcast. She appreciates the varying perspectives. Perceptive, that's where I used to work. Helps me remember that I'm allowed to have a different perspective myself. I appreciate the back and forth camaraderie between you, being me, Troy, and Engel as well. It just seems like you guys have fun. You're not idiots, and that helps too. Maybe A10 should give you all jobs and get rid of their current being pets.
We don't have a grilling segment, though.
Yeah, and we tried that, but problem is most of those dingbats own part of the station. So we thought that there might be a chance that we could possibly get that 7 o'clock slot before they hired the guy from Alabama or Arkansas or wherever he's from, and he's a good guy, but they really wanted an SEC person, and they got that. So that's what he is. Turns out she does have a baseball question. Why the Puig hate? I live in Arizona currently, not for long, long story, but I was doing a Diamondbacks podcast and have gotten into the Diamondback fan base since I've been here, and they're really good people, and the problem is I've never liked the Dodgers, and the problem with L.A. and New York, well, let me put it this way. The Dodgers are to the West Coast and the National League what the Yankees are to the American League and to the East Coast. They're there, they've got money out their wazoo, and they're just kind of dicks. Their fans are dicks. Their players are typically dicks. They're just dicks. And, nobody likes
what are they?
Los Angeles. They're dicks.
Oh, okay.
This episode is brought to you by the word dick.
Last week it was wow and awesome. This week it's dicks.
Yeah. This week it's dicks. I don't think I'll be cutting that one out for the for the soundboard. I don't think it'd be as good as some of the other ones we've had. Like,
no, probably not.
No, probably not. Anyways, I digress. But yes, he's super popular. He's been flooded into the baseball, you know, atmosphere, and everybody's in love with this guy. But frankly, he's done things that are awesome, but he's also done it for 1 month. We've seen players come through with great months, not as good as this one, mind you, but it's been a great month and whatever. And why shouldn't he be in the All-Star game? The All-Star game is a popularity vote, and it's about the players the public wants to see. Then why not Puig? Because we're tired of being force-fed these players from LA and New York. He's both popular and a player everyone is talking about right now. That's part of the problem. Why hate just because he's a rookie? Because he's only been playing a month. Let's see what he's done when he's seen the league twice. If we'd kept Myers, sorry, I know, sore subject, and started him this year at the same time the Dodgers brought up Puig, and he absolutely exploded, wouldn't we want everything we could to get him in the All-Star game? We would,
absolutely.
But we wouldn't be able to. But we would not be able to.
Well, it doesn't matter. I think that's a good question, though, because it's basically flipping it over. I mean, the market size is irrelevant. If a player is coming up and they go on a tear like that, I mean, obviously we'd be behind that guy. So I think it's a fair question to ask. Now,
but the bigger problem with Puig, let me finish this real quick, and then I'll go back to Mike. The bigger problem with Puig is he's a jerk. He's disrespected players.
Look at like 90% of the guys in this game. A lot of them are jerks. Who cares?
That's fine, but you don't get to be a jerk after 1 month in the league.
What has he done that makes him a jerk?
He's disrespected. And I cannot. Luis Gonzalez.
Okay, the guy's like 22 years old. He probably doesn't even. He's played in Cuba, which is isolated from everywhere else.
Well, sure.
I'm sure he doesn't even know who like 90% of the Dodgers Hall of Fame is.
But I'll tell you this, it was enough that it got Mark McGwire on his tail, who is the batting coach for the Dodgers. So, I mean, McGwire,
he's a stand-up guy himself,
wrong,
right?
For all that he's done wrong in baseball, he's a jerk. He had two guys by the throat in that fight. But, I mean, for all that he's done wrong, he understands where respect should be given, you know, in that kind of process. And he's disrespected a few other guys around the league. It's been reported, and it continues to come out. Maybe he'll change, and maybe he'll get better, but that's my issue. Because it's happened right here, and because the Dodgers are chasing Arizona and everything else that's going on with that, you know, quote-unquote rivalry, because Arizona's like Colorado and kind of like Kansas City in that they don't really have a rival because, I know, Cardinals are our rival. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
But, you know, they don't really have a rival. The closest thing for Arizona is L.A. It's just like the Rockies kind of rival with L.A. a little bit. They rival with San Diego, you know. Kansas City rivals with the White Sox, with the Twins. We just don't really like Twins fans around Kansas City. But, I mean, really there isn't that real strong rival. You don't have the Yankees-Red Sox in Kansas City or Arizona. You don't. But in L.A., they have L.A.-San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. And so Arizona doesn't really have that, so they kind of grab onto the Dodgers as a rival, and it is what it is. But Arizona, until this last series, had absolutely owned the Dodgers, too. Of course, I go to a game, and they lose the whole series, so figure
right.
that one out. But, Mike, you were saying something. I cut you off to finish my thought on Puig, so go ahead if you remember
where
you're at.
It's just, I think it's, I don't know. They had a chance. The fans had a chance to vote him in, and they didn't in the final vote. And so, you know, I think that kind of shows that, you know, other fans mobilized and they got him going. So, I mean, it's a moot point at this stage. But I thought he was deserving. I mean, it's the All-Star game. Who cares? I mean, you look at what Yonis Cespedes did last night in the Home Run Derby. I mean, that was impressive stuff.
Sure. That was pretty awesome.
I mean,
he's not a very good guy either, but that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, sure. I mean, it's just kind of a spectacle, but at the same time, that's kind of exciting, you know, to get those guys in there and just kind of watch them play and be, you know, these physical marvels and just crush everything. And, you know, you see the best athletes against the best, you know, so I think that's why there was so much interest behind him. And I think, you know, I think if he'd have been in there, it would have been fine. So I didn't have nearly the problem that you did, but I also don't have the Diamondbacks thing, and I also prefer the Dodgers over the Diamondbacks. So there you go.
Shame on you. That's like preferring the Yankees over anybody.
No, it's not.
No. But, Audra, I hope that answers all of your questions. And if you shoot me your address, because they are physical gift certificates, I will send you out a $10 to Kelly's. And, again, you can email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Again, this show's more of an email show than it's going to be a lot of other stuff, because the Royals really didn't play a whole lot since we last talked and really didn't do anything worth talking about. We did get a letter from our friend Jack Pippinger in Australia, and that's I always get his handle wrong. I should just write it down, but I don't.
Yeah.
But it's Royals Fan Down Under. It's I think it's Royal singular fan.
D-U-F.
No, is it?
There's something D-U-F.
Oh, no, it's Royal D-U-F. That's right. It's Royal singular D-U-F. And then and so he's a great Royals fan, watches all the way from Australia. We're going to have him on one of these days. I have to figure out when I want to do that. I might wait for the off season and to coordinate it right. But there's a few quote-unquote normal people or fans of the shows that I'm going to have on. He's one. I'm going to have George Brett's son, who's a longtime friend of the program.
Tim Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson's going to come on.
Yeah, Jackson's
and,
good dude.
I was going to have him on to begin the season, and then something came up, and the episode he was supposed to be on, I didn't get done, and I think he's kind of mad.
Well, you know, his brother Dylan plays for KU, too, so they're, like,
and,
all around here.
And he's like a football... Uh-oh. What happened here? Hang on just a second. I had something ding me.
Uh-oh.
It says we're still recording. Oh, Jeff might have tried to just call. I might have missed a call from Jeff. There we go. Hey, Jeff Herr.
I'm back. Wow.
Wow, did your computer blow up?
I just had the worst computer crash I've ever had. I don't know what happened. I was on Fangraphs looking up Ben Zobrist's stats to compare from the David Lowe conversation, and
is,
all of
yeah.
a sudden I get this message, Ben Zobrist Fangraph page is not working, and my computer just blows up. So.
Well, apparently Audra did not want you involved in that email in any way, shape, or form,
yeah,
and like sent some
it was
super virus.
Email. Through,
yeah,
I mean, it was just amazing. So,
through my voice.
The whole history of the Kansas City Baseball Vault / Royal Man Report.
So you'll have to go back and actually listen to an episode. I know that'll be hard for you, but you'll actually have to try to do that this week sometime. But anyways, we have another email that we're talking about, Jeff. We're talking our friend Royal Down Royal DUF on Twitter, Jack Pippinger from Australia. He sent us an email, and he talked a lot about the first half of it, and he joked, you know, at the end that he sent another book because that's what Jack does, and that's okay. I like reading Jack's books. They're always very good. But he talked about how he expects George Brett to turn over the reins to Graffel during the break and just say that, you know, he wasn't really making an impact. But batting coaches don't in general. I mean – I think there's something to be said for having a good batting coach. Like, for example, in L.A., a lot of the coaches are former players there. Here in Arizona, same kind of thing. You have Don Baylor, who's a hitting coach, I think.
Well, that one brawl, it was like every single coach was a former player and a reasonably
right.
well-known one. It was crazy. It was like, you know, Kirk Gibson, the manager out there, Don Mattingly, the manager, you know, both, you know, MVP guys. You know, you got McGuire.
Kirk Gibson, who was
you got Alan Trammell.
Giant.
I mean, all this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then Don Baylor gets out there. And he, you know, he's not a little guy, and neither is McGuire. And
no.
You just could see these two.
Matt Williams.
Two, yeah. Oh, yeah.
McGuire were jaw to jaw that whole time. Like, they had each other by the collar. It was pretty awesome.
And I don't think that's the first time that's happened.
I don't know.
I would have to look back in history, but I seem to vaguely remember those two having problems as players, too.
Maybe. I don't remember anything, but it's...
Which two? Sorry, I had to get up for a second. What?
Matt Williams and Mark McGuire.
Can't think
player
off
coaches.
The top of my head.
And I could be wrong. And, you know, it seems like everybody's had an issue with everybody's had an issue with another player at some point. So who knows? But he did throw in some. He talked about that the hitting coach doesn't make much difference. And I mean, I never expected the whole thing with Brett was a smokescreen. I said that. I said that it wasn't going to turn this team around and do much. And it was a smokescreen to take the pressure off of Ned Yost and everything else that was going on right then. And really, the only solution to this team is a total clear out. And I hate to say that because I like Dayton Moore, and that's going to come up here in a minute in his letter. But I think at some point you just got to clean house. But he did say some points for discussion. He said, according to Bob Dutton today, and this was sent like last week sometime, July 14th, so a couple days ago.
Not too long.
Gio didn't play the last 2 days because he was nicked up, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I contacted Steve Stewart, and he said, and I'd like to know how he knows Steve Stewart, because that might be a contact I need to explore. He asked Ned, using the actual term in pregame interview, Ned said Gio had a little tightness in his hip, but Miggy has big numbers against Kazmir, so they were going to go that way. He found it interesting that Gio was starting to hit and kind of doing well defensively, and then all of a sudden he's hurting. And you know, they've always done this up, and they've never given Gio a real chance. And
no.
He goes, remember when Gio was coming up to be the quote unquote everyday second baseman? And we haven't seen that. I mean, is Gio ever going to get a real chance, Mike?
I don't think so. Not with this organization. I mean, we've talked enough about like what kinds of things that this organization looks at, and Giovitella just doesn't do a lot of those. I mean, he's not a base stealer. He's not your, you know, he's always had the reputation of being bad defensively. He's gotten better. He plays just fine, you know, just to watch him. You know, he just needs to hit. If he hits, he'll get the opportunity. But, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 there. If he doesn't hit, he won't get the opportunity. So it's just, they've kind of been up and down with him the whole time. You know, he came in at the end of 2011. The whole year they were talking about how they needed to get him to work on his glove. And when we talked to Kevin Goldstein, you know, kind of looking back at that year, he was talking about how it was kind of strange that they were keeping him down there when, you know, in the month of June, he was leading professional baseball in base hits. You know, he had more than anybody at the big league level, anybody in the minors. And, you know, that just wasn't enough. Meanwhile, Chris Getz was, you know, flailing around, being pretty terrible. And, you know, the thing that I think Goldstein said was that, you know, the extra 2 months really isn't going to make him that much better of a defender. And it makes sense. I mean, what are you going to do? At a certain point, you know, player's not going to get that much better in a certain area. You can maybe do some things that you pick up. Maybe there are some experience things that you just kind of have to get yourself used to. You know, the big leagues play at a different speed than AAA. You know, that's why there's so many players that can't cut it. And there's so many of those 4A players. And so what I kind of see is, you know, they gave him 2 months. One of those, he was hurt with a hip. He had that torn labrum. So that's not good. And then the next year, they kept bringing him up, but they'd bring him up for like 2 or 3 weeks, and he would get a couple hits, and he would sit the next 2 days. And so now you've got a guy who has been brought up in 3 different years, and he's only now getting to his 400th career plate appearance. You know, he's got maybe 115 games under his belt. And the big thing that, you know, I think everybody is kind of on about is that, yeah, maybe Giovitella is never going to be the guy that you kind of expect him to or hoped he would when he was coming up. But they spent, you know, years on Chris Getz, and all you kind of ask is to get the same opportunity for a guy that, you know, is very clearly at least a similar option and has some upside to be better than Getz. And but I just don't think the Royals see it that way. I think that they want to get the gritty guys, and kind of once they get an idea of a player in their head, you know, they stick with it. You know, Irving Falu is always going to be a career minor leaguer to the Royals because he's always been in the minor leagues in his career. You know, Mike Aviles, he was always kind of that same guy until he went out and, you know, basically forced them to bring him up in 2008. David Lowe, we talked about earlier, he's been in Omaha for most of the last 4 years. And, you know, I easily think he could have been a guy who played over Jeff Francoeur, but circumstances were that they had to keep Francoeur. And so they get stuck in their ways, and, you know, it really kind of causes them to lose sight of, you know, putting the best team on the field because they're not willing to give these guys a shot. Now, you know, at this point, the Royals season is, you know, probably close to winding down as far as being a contender, but they can take the rest of the year and figure out if Giovitella is going to be the guy. And if he plays mostly every day for the next 2.5 months, they can figure that out. And then they know, at least they know that going into next winter and into next spring training, and they know what they need to look for. You know, over the last couple of years, they've just kind of been floating because they've never found out. It's the same thing they did with Keila Kaihui. They could have found out in 2009 that he wasn't going to be good enough for the big leagues, but they waited. And you know, 2 years later, they expect him to chip in, and he obviously couldn't, and they got stuck behind it. And so it's just this stubbornness, it seems like, that they don't want to take a chance on these guys because they don't fit their mold of what they should be when the performance is there in the minor leagues that is worthy of a look at a higher level.
I agree with a lot of your points, and I think with all your points, Mike, and I think that Johnny Giovitella's situation is very symptomatic of broader underlying issues that have plagued this organization definitely for all of Dayton Moore's tenure and probably beyond that. And those are, I guess in a broad sense, you could term it as the Royals just don't have a concept of value and what is valuable in baseball, whether it's a larger concept such as on-base percentage and the importance of walks and getting people on base so that they can actually score as opposed to just swinging at every fastball that they see.
Mm-hmm.
And, or when you break it down to a smaller scale, someone like a Johnny Giovitella and, you know, against all odds, David Lowe is kind of fighting it off right now. But, you know, the second he stops hitting 290 and drops down to 260, then things are going to start moving against him in terms of the Royals, because it seems as though from the Royals' perspective, you either have to be a superstar or you have to, at least in terms of perception, do one thing or a couple of small, non-important things really well. You talked about the difference between Chris Getz and Johnny Giovitella. Chris Getz getting how he's 1,400 at-bats or however many he's had. What did they always say? Chris Getz, oh, he's great on defense. Man, can he bunt. You know, like he's really skilled at bunting. And in terms of, like, in a vacuum, if you turn bunting, okay, Chris Getz is the best bunter in the history of baseball. Who gives a flying whatever? You know, no one cares because it doesn't – even if that was the case, it's not going to –
How often do you need that bunt?
Exactly, and you're not going to put yourself in a position where the bunt is the smarter play. For, if you ask me, ever. But even if I were to – even if I were to – concede that there are some situations where maybe a bunt is appropriate, well, even, I mean, how often are you really in that situation? So when you're a Johnny Giovitella or you're a David Lowe, and we talked about it, you discussed it, Mike, when we were talking about David Lowe earlier, and you said, you know, is he going to be the player that he is right now, the 1.7 WAR, the hitting 290 with the over 700 OPS, or it's, I don't know what his OPS is, but it's pretty good. But, you know, I mean, is he going to be that player over his career? No. If you started him over 162 games, he's going to be exposed as an average player. And as you said, jack of all trades, master of none. But in the Royals' eyes, that provides no value because he doesn't have one skill that he brings to the table that nobody else does. And if you don't have that, or you're not at least projected to be a superstar, then you're a throwaway in this organization. And that's because they don't understand the value of having someone who, to use your example earlier, Mike, if they had – the Royals had six players. Right now they only have four, I believe you said. If they had six players who were in the lineup performing at an above-average level for Major League Baseball, and then you plug David Lowe in on top of that, that's very valuable. And I remember we had Jason Parks on one show, and this kind of flips it to pitching a little bit. We had Jason Parks on a show a while back, and he talked about Jason Adam. And he goes, is he going to be a front rotation guy? No. But is he going to be a guy who can eat a lot of innings, give you 200, maybe more innings per year, hold down that fourth or fifth spot in a rotation, and have an ERA somewhere between 4.0 and 4.5, and be consistent in that manner? He is going to be that guy. And he goes, that has value to an organization. But to the Royals, it doesn't. And while pitching might be a little bit different because the pitching is
right. Well,
because Bruce Chinn is your best pitcher with a 4-point-whatever ERA in 2012 or whatever it is. But to keep it with hitting, when you have that similar aspect of a hitter, that kind of average player that teams need, you know, Ben Zobrist is an all-star. His career batting average is .260, but he's so valuable to that team because of, first, he's a little bit more valuable because
he's like 38% of the time.
Yeah, and he has a little bit more defensive versatility than someone like Giovitella or Lowe, but all the same, there's a lot more value in that than the Royals place, and it's a blind spot in this organization. So they want you to be a superstar or want you to do something. That's why they always talk about these nebulous little things. And also, yeah. I think it's an easy way for them to kind of push their agenda when they can say, oh, well, he doesn't do the little things well, or he doesn't, you know, he's right. not. They talk about all these things that you can't quantify, because then no one can say they're wrong. You know, right. Oh, well, you're wrong. You know, Johnny Giovitella is just as good in the clubhouse as Chris Getz. And then, oh, you know, you don't see it every day. You don't know. You know, things yeah. like that. It's easy to make those things. So when the Royals don't know what to do with a player, that's how they attack them, because no one can say they're wrong. Someone can say, here are the numbers. Look at what Johnny Giovitella brings to the table. And they say, that doesn't tell the whole story. And that's the yeah. Royals in a nutshell. And they find different ways. They find excuses to say to do what ultimately amounts to a gut feeling that is basically a projection of sentiments of 1970s style baseball. Basically, the Johnny Giovitella system, while to most teams probably not very important and not the hugest deal, and to this team really shouldn't be, because of what it represents about how the organization approaches baseball in general, I think is a much bigger deal than people give it credit for. That's the hard thing that I think people have trouble seeing sometimes, and why some of us, the quote-unquote bloggers, the dime a dozen bloggers out there on on Twitter and everything, that's why Johnny Giovitella is such a big deal to us. None of us think he's going to be an all-star or a great player, yeah. but it's getting the Royals to change their perception, to try and find a better way to assess value and see what can make a baseball team work, because to this point, they just haven't shown it. And that is the biggest just failure that this organization has had. And Johnny Giovitella is just the latest example, assuming, you know, they continue to try and find a way to not give him a shot.
Yeah, I think they put so much emphasis on the little things, and it's, you know, at a certain point, you have to do the big things well, too. And even more important, that's why they are the big things. You know, I don't think you worry so much about bunts if you've got, you know, four guys sitting on 15 homers at the All-Star break. You know, who cares? You know, if they're in the middle of the pack of scoring, you know, a couple games over 500 in the record, do you really care that much about, you know, the bunts? Is it so much of a big deal that, you know, somebody doesn't go and hit a ground ball to the right side and move a runner over? You know, I mean, it adds up, and it does help, and sometimes in that situation, if that's all you can do, yeah, I mean, contribute, you know, get that extra base and kind of get the most out of that at bat if you're just going to make an out. That's fine. But at a certain point, you know, that has to be an addition, a supplement, a situational thing. It can't be what you base your entire offensive approach on. You know, if you don't get the runners on in the first place because you're hacking at every pitch, and you seem to be anti-walk, well, I mean, that's kind of going to make it difficult to score runs. And if you can't hit home runs, well, then you've got to string things together. And you know, you can't give up outs. You can't go out and you know, go with the approach that you're just going to try to slap the ball the other way, because you know, you're just taking away power from your hitter. You're taking away the opportunity to get a big inning going. And it's just all those different things. You know, if you're only focusing on the little things, the big things is, you know, they still matter. And the Royals, for whatever reason, really want to focus on the little things and think that that's going to be what brings them out. It's just not.
Well, and here's my thing and my last thought on Gio, and then we'll get back to the letter. But today, the Royals signed, today being the 16th of July, the Royals signed infielder Pedro Siriaco from the Padres, spent 5 years of his minor league career in Arizona before being let go as a free agent. He signed with the Red Sox and was given, and this is so important to what they're going to shove down our throats in a week or two, but he was given regular playing time, and he responded by batting .293 in 76 games, stole 16 bases in 19 attempts, but he was waived by the Padres after hitting just .216 in 51 at-bats over 28 games. Oh, I'm sorry. That's what he batted before the trade, June 14th, and then he's batted .238 since in 23 games with the Padres. He was waived, and so the Royals had to add him to the 40-man. He has no options left, so he has to be put on the Major League roster or waived again, which wouldn't be unheard of to do, but would be unusual. But apparently they already had a spot in the 40-man for him. I think the Royals had a couple open spots. I haven't been watching the 40-man like I should.
They were at 38,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, so they just added him, so they didn't have to cut anybody. And then he will be added to the 25-man. Do not think he won't be. And I tell you, I think that it's going to be Gio that gets sent down.
I don't get that, though. I mean, I understand like that there's that problem, but at the same time, you're looking at it would be Ciriaco, Elliot Johnson, and Miguel Tejada, and those are your infielders.
He's Elliot Johnson / Miguel Tejada 2.0. He's the same player, and that's who the Royals love. It's everything you guys said wrapped up in a nice little package with a bow put right on top and shoved down the Royals fans' throat.
No, I don't think it's going to happen that way. I just
I hope I'm
because,
wrong.
Because, you know, I'm going off of Bob Dutton's report and his... You know, Dutton's a reliable source, and the early indications that he could get out of them is that it's just going to be a depth thing.
Well,
I know they've said that before, and it's I wouldn't be surprised at all if it actually did turn out that it was Giovitella. But I mean, they can't be that ridiculously short-sighted. They just can't.
They did it with Uni. Why would we think they wouldn't do it with this guy? And this is coming from Bob Dutton's article on the 16th of July as well, which with the headline, Royals claim infielder Pedro Ciriaco on waivers from Padres. Please read Bob's articles on the Star. They're still free, and he deserves the hits. So make sure you go out and read Bob's articles because he's great and he's a friend of the program.
Read Bob, read Sam Mellinger, read Pete Grathoff, and that's where you can stop.
Yeah, Grathoff isn't a friend of the program yet, but we're going to work on that, I think. No. Yeah, I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I'll be very angry.
And it's like you said. I mean, they could still waive him. It could be something where they wanted to get the claim in now while they have a couple of days, you know, and see what happens. And if they decide that, okay, they don't have anybody to move, or they can't, you know, fudge up a DL stint or something, well, they can just go drop him again. I mean, it's the same thing. Toronto did that, like, all winter long. They would pick up a guy, put them right back on waivers, see if they could sneak them through. And if they did, they would have, you know, an extra guy in the minor leagues that they could use as depth later on. If they didn't clear, well, they just let them go. You know, there's no real indication that the Royals are that clever. But, you know, it is something that's possible. It could be that they're just waiting till Friday and, you know, put someone on the DL. Maybe they have a trade brewing with Miguel Tejada, just somebody for some reason. I don't know. There's a ton of different things, and I think it's a little hasty to react to think that it's Giovitella. I mean, there's a non-zero chance that they'll option him back to Omaha. So, I mean, it's still something to be looking out for. But, you know, probably by the time we have this going and everybody hears this, they might have that decision made already. So all of this could be moot.
I hope to get that up tomorrow, but if not, I mean, the discussion's still there, and it's still legitimate to what's going on. If you want to see a fun conversation, and you probably won't be able to find it by the time this episode gets up, but I'm moving to Albuquerque, which is a story for another day, but there's another Royals fan there, and he goes by Master Bait, I believe it is. Master Bass, I'm sorry. Him and I and Joe and Bugada have been having a conversation, and we were joked about that as there seems to be more Royals fans coming to New Mexico, we're going to have to start a Royals fan suicide line or something. I was like, yes, 1-800-NM-ROYALS is the New Mexico Royals suicide hotline, and we've been making jokes about what calls would be. One would be, he just sent one, I'm a Royals fan, and I just don't see the point of going on anymore. And that pretty much summed up how I felt going into recording this today. It's just so frustrating watching this team right now, but it is what it is, and we continue on. But let me get back to Jack's article here, because that was a really good point. Obviously, we had a lot of thought on that. He would like to hear more about Matt Shields in AA Northwest Arkansas. I have been very awful since I moved to since I moved to Arizona about getting interviews set up, I have Matt's number, and we are going to have him on. I will promise you we'll have him on. The biggest problem is we record in the evenings. I don't like to have to record an interview without the guys, even though this one the guys are completely okay with me doing. But I just haven't gotten a time when I'm, one, off work when Matt's not playing baseball.
Yeah.
And normally I would do these on the weekends, like on a Sunday or something, and Matt has Matt usually plays at 6 o'clock for AA Northwest Arkansas on Sunday night. So that's been a bit of a difficulty for us. And I also want to have Brooks Pounders on. He was all set up, and I just didn't get it done. We're going to do that. But instead of talking about Matt Fields, who I will have on, I do want to say this, and this kind of goes to Audra's letter too. We used to have a lot of interviews, and we'll get back to that.
Yep.
But I had an interview set up. Director of scouting for the Royals.
J.J. Piccolo.
J.J. Piccolo. Yeah. And I have since canceled that interview. And the reason why is right now I don't feel that I could have him on and ask the questions that I want to ask without asking him the ones that I should ask. I don't feel that I have more journalistic integrity than to bring him on, talk about a few draft picks, and not say what the hell is wrong with the development with the Royals organization, what is going on in the front office, how do we fix it? And he won't answer those things, and it's going to turn out ugly, and I don't want to deal with it. And frankly, I still feel that the organization needs cleaned out, and I like JJ a lot. I love JJ as a person. We've had some great email exchanges, but even the emails I've gotten from JJ have had a tint of difference to them than they used to. And he may just be busy, but it just feels different with the organization right now. And so I've held back on some of those, and it's just been a time issue for getting the rest of it done. So I do apologize to the listeners that like the interviews. We'll get back to that. Don't worry, we'll get back to that, especially in the off season. But right now, it's just a real bad time for me to do all that. And then his next point was, what is with the restarting of the I-29 Express all of a sudden? Joseph comes up to cover for Davis. I didn't even realize Joseph was up. He was up and down so fast. And then they bring up Tiford for one game and force him to travel twice in 2 days and never use him. Did they intend not to use him? That's hard to say. They did the same thing to Verdugo last year. His family all came out from California and they didn't use him. Just seems a waste of hours on plane unless Ned or Dayton get their frequent flyer miles. Well, I got news for you. I don't think they fly.
No, they don't. They
drive. Give them a car.
Yeah.
And I know this because there's guys that saw several of the guys last year going back and forth through St. Joe.
Yeah.
So they don't fly. They drive. And who knows? I mean, they're using the roster correctly using the I-29 Express.
That's what it's there for. I mean, that's your depth. If those guys have options, you use them. I mean, it worked out because they had Wade Davis who went on the paternity list. And so that, you know, that's 72 hours where he could have been, off the active roster. It allows them to bring up another bullpen arm. So they bring in Joseph. And, you know, he pitched in the two next games. And so, you know, then there's that third day, and, you know, they're not going to use Joseph, so they might as well use Tiford. So they bring Tiford up just in case they need him. And I think that was the Chen game, and Chen, you know, pitched well. So they didn't really need to have him. And it's just one of those things. They go into it expecting to use the guy, and it just doesn't happen. And that's, you know, kind of what happens sometimes. You want to have the option there, so that you're not running everybody else out there all the time. And it's just one of those things. It's not any, you know, I mean, they're still people, and it still is kind of making them move around, but at the same time, they all kind of know that. And it's just something that it comes with the territory. And I think if you're asking Everett Tiefert, hey, do you want to go to the big leagues today? You'll make that 3-hour drive to go to the big leagues. I think that's not a problem.
And you got to realize these guys, first, they want to play in the big leagues, even if they don't get used like that. But more importantly, every game they're up, they're making somewhere between $1,000 and $3,000. So don't feel too bad for these guys, because it's worth their while to make that. I would drive to Omaha and back without stopping for a grand. So don't worry about these guys. They're getting paid well for their little trip up and back. And then he says, finally, why was Dayton being so coy in his pregame interview today? Steve asked all the right questions, but Dayton waved off each one. On whether he'll consider moves if the team does not get going in the next few weeks, Dayton mentioned the A's, something he and Ned have referenced several times the last few months about how they turned it around. And but he says, does he not realize that Yost is not Melvin and he is not Bean? I think
probably not.
I think that Yeah, I think this is at best idealized thinking and at worst intentional deception of the fans who buy tickets. Now, Dayton isn't as clever as you're giving him credit for. He's a very smart man. But what he is he's gotten back to being old Dayton. Dayton, for a while, was really good about answering questions. He was given really precise answers. And then that's how he was when I went to Blog to the K. And then when Mike went to it wasn't Blog to the K, but it was
the first one
blog
they did
at FanFest.
And we dubbed it the Dayton Moore filibuster.
Yeah.
We would ask a question. He would kind of start to answer it, and he would twist it to something that was barely related to the question that we asked, and he would keep going. And I think we got like 4 questions in on him in 15 minutes. I mean, the thing is, it's Dayton Moore. I mean, he's the general manager of a team that is underwhelmed this year, in a year where they went out and said that they were going to, the idea based on their moves was that they were going to contend. And, he can't sit here in the middle of the year and say, well, we're going to pack it in now. Because, I mean, there are teams that historically have come back and had a shot. And so, he can't send that message to the team, and he can't send it, he can't, maybe he doesn't even want to face it himself. I mean, it's reasonable. I think they just have to get through this stretch and then they'll know what they're going to do. It's very possible if he doesn't have an answer to the question, he just doesn't know himself.
And go ahead, Jeff. I kind of haven't let you get in. Go ahead.
Just to kind of piggyback on that idea, I think, we're kind of approaching the point in the season now where Dayton Moore is reaching that, I believe the term is a moral hazard, where his contract is up after next year. Like Ned Yost this year, this is the last year of his contract. It's actually kind of rare to see someone like a manager, a little bit less rare for a manager than a GM, but you typically don't see too many GMs go into the last year of their contract without, getting an extension, because first of all, not many players want to come play for a GM that they know might not be there the next year. And it creates an adverse situation where they might make a decision that's not going to benefit the team in the long run. So he's kind of already at that point, because Dayton Moore has to say, okay, do I want to try and plan for next year, the last year of my contract, and maybe finish out this year strong and show some promise to get an extension so we can make this thing work? Or is this the year? And if I don't win 81 games or more this year, is my time up? And if that's the case, and July 30th comes around, and Chase Utley is available, but it's going to take Yordano Ventura, Adalberto Mondesi, and Kyle Zimmer to do it. But I think, as Dayton Moore, that Chase Utley is going to be the guy to get them over that hump and get them that 81st win and keep me my job. Does he do that while sacrificing what's best for this team 2015, 2014, 2015, 2016? I mean, I don't know what he'll do. And it's going to take a real long look. It's going to take him taking a real long look at himself in the mirror. And kind of like you said, Mike, I mean, he might not want to admit that he's throwing in the towel and maybe looking for next year, but he also has to try and figure out what's best for his job, what's best for the organization. I mean, I don't envy that position at all. I mean, we can sit here as fans and say what we want to do because we want what's best for the organization, but he's in a little bit different position because this is his livelihood. So, he's got to keep it going for his sake. I mean, it's a little bit easier for him probably to know because – if one of us got fired, we'd have a big uncertainty of what's going to go on in our life. But if he gets fired, I mean, this is baseball. It's quote-unquote baseball people. Dayton Moore's
once
a baseball
you're in,
guy.
You're, it's tough to
he'll,
get out.
He'll land on his feet. He might not make as much money. He might not have a high-profile position. But come next year, he'd have a job. He's a great
scout. Well, I mean, look at what Allard Baird's doing. Allard Baird's working for the Red Sox, and he's a pretty good executive. It's just that you always run into those guys, and to make a kind of analogy, you look at a lot of NFL guys, they'll be a really, really good coordinator, and you give them a head coaching job, and they can't do it. But you put them back in a coordinator spot, and they're great.
And what's that called?
Kind of the same thing.
I think it's the Phillips principle or something like that, where you rise to your level of incompetence. You know, or
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you can get pushed as far as you can go, and there is just a certain point where you just aren't going to be able to be good. You know, just it's a job. A general manager is a job where there's 30 of them, and you know, you could probably have 10 guys who are very, very good GMs, 10 guys who are average GMs, and 10 guys who are bad GMs. And so you're looking at, you know, 10 jobs, 10 guys who are doing their job optimally, taking risks, doing, you know, everything right, getting the breaks. It's a tough standard to live up to. Now, that doesn't excuse any of the moves. I mean, you can still say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to sign Jeff Rancourt to an extension. I'm not going to sign Bruce Chen for, you know, 2 years. I'm not going to bring Luke Hochaver back for $4.5 million and put him in the bullpen. You know, you can make different decisions, but yeah, it's an unenviable position. I don't know how I would handle it. It would be extremely difficult.
Well, and we'll just see how that all turns out. But I think a lot of that has to do with, like I was saying before, people don't give David Glass enough credit. I think there's a lot of heat coming. I mean, he's waited too long, so he doesn't deserve a lot of credit. But I think there's a lot of heat coming on this front office team. And if they don't get it right, they're gonna be without a job. And they're going to be fine because Dayton will go on to be the director of scouting for somebody or a scout for somebody. And J.J. Piccola will go on to be a scout or do something with the minor leagues for somebody because they're both very good at what they do, but they need other people that do things that help them because right now they're not getting the job done. That's it for the two emails. Like I said, they are both long, and that's kind of how I did the show this week. He did say when he wrote this letter, he's on what he calls Ned Watch. He believes that Ned will get fired once he gets 10 games below 500. When this letter was wrote 2 days ago, Ned Watch was down to 5, so they were 5 games below 500. And if they lost again, which I believe they did on June, if they lost again, it would be down to 4, which would be the lowest point since June 7. So he believes that 4 more losses and he's done. Thanks again to Jack for writing us another book. And if you know, we appreciate Jack, and you know, there's a lot of baseball fans in Australia. It's really surprising. The Diamondbacks have a few too, and it just blows my mind that it's so hot down there, or it's as hot as it is. I wouldn't know why anybody in Australia would watch. Would watch baseball, but they do.
Well,
so
I don't know what else is there to do, Jack. What else is there to do in Australia?
And so, if you would watch baseball, why would you be a Royals fan?
Right. I do believe that cricket is pretty big in Australia. So
yeah, it's true.
Some similarities between cricket and baseball. I like cricket a lot. I think it's a fun sport.
I couldn't even.
So
I went to this. They're called Nerd Nights, and they're basically like presentations. And the one I went to was like a night of about 22-minute presentations, and this guy was going to try to explain the rules of cricket to us in 2 minutes, and it was a big failure because it didn't help at all.
It would take longer than that, but I could explain it to you. But it's a fun game. Now, to answer the question that you had, Troy, about why, if he does like baseball, he would be a Royals fan, that I cannot help with and make out of the undersoul.
Well, I think Jeff Parker was talking, royally speaking, on Twitter. He was saying, you know, that his son doesn't know anything about the Royals being a winning team, and he's not going to try to force his son to be a Royals fan. And it's like, that's a special kind of mercy right there, because it's tough to be a fan of a team that sucks. I mean, and they've sucked for so long. And it's
not just like the Chiefs, who just kind of have sucked the last few years, and when we were growing up, they were awesome. Like, the Royals have... I turned 28 this year, and that's exactly how many years the Royals have missed the playoffs. And, like, talk about Jeff Parker's son. I mean, I don't know the Royals being good. You know, I grew up, and my first real memories of baseball started around, you know, obviously played as a kid, but as terms of professional baseball, really kind of started around the strike and George Brett retiring and the uncertainty after Ewing Kauffman died, and then everything just kind of snowballed, and this is what my life has been as a Royals fan. And there was a time when I wasn't as into baseball as I am now, and I kind of stepped away from it. I never really rooted for another team because the Royals are my team, but I just kind of took a little bit of a hiatus from baseball. But, yeah, man, it is tough. So, I mean, if I commend you for not definitely, Jack, not taking the easy way out in terms of being a fan of a baseball team, because I'd probably choose the Rays or something.
Well, we know you choose the Rays. There's no doubt about that.
Come on.
Whatever team gets traded to next year.
I have an app on my email that tries to apply different social media services, and if it finds somebody's email linked to a social media service, it gives me their picture and stuff. And if the picture I have of Jack is correct, he is an older gentleman, so he may remember the Royals from the great years,
oh,
too.
Oh, back then.
He made the Royals remember the Royals of the 70s and 80s. So that might have something to do with it as well. We got to wrap this up because we've been talking for over an hour and a half. It's hard to say how much of it makes the show, but
it's
plenty long. Yeah, it's a short show. But I did want to make one All-Star note because we're recording this as the All-Star game's going on. Robinson Cano got hit by a pitch by Matt Harvey. That's New York to New York. And he left the game with an injury. So
yeah,
what a shame. I never root for somebody to get hurt. But,
and we call that gentleman karma. That's what,
yes. Yeah, well, he got booed in New York, and there was no sort of outcry about it. Nothing.
But we're awful people here in Kansas City for doing the same thing.
No class.
We're going to wrap it up. Do you have any closing thoughts, Mike?
Well, yeah, we need to talk about Kyle Zimmer.
Yes, that's right. You did just post that to me.
Kyle Zimmer.
On that note, congratulations to you for getting mentioned by Bob Dutton, I do believe,
correct?
Yeah,
it was by Pete Gradoff.
Either way, it works.
He was the minors for the Ball Star on Casey Star. But, yeah, I'm not taking the credit. I'm going to give that to Jen Nevius on Kings of Coffin because she lives in South Jersey. She goes to all kinds of Wilmington games. She's got a press pass. She gets in there. You can find a lot of her stuff, her post-game stuff. It ends up on YouTube. And one of the things was, you know, after the game, after Zimmer's last start, and he's been filthy. I mean, oh, my God. You know, we've talked about how he'd come out and he'd struggled and things like that. Yeah, not anymore. His last four starts, he struck out like 36, and he's walked 2. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's made just a couple of changes with his mechanics, and it's really turned him back around. And his last four starts, he's been awesome. And so, you know, his last start, it was a hot day, so they put him out there. He pitches 5 innings, struck out 10 guys, only walked 1, I think only gave up a couple of hits. And after the game, he goes and talks to the manager, and, you know, everybody who's, you know, part of the press there, they see this and they ask later, and, you know, they come out and they're saying, oh, yeah, well, Kyle's going to be going to Arkansas. So, you know, that kind of came out late, and, you know, we were able to kind of get something posted on the blog, and, you know, nobody else had it at that point. So that was pretty cool.
And then they told Zimmer, go ahead, would you go grab Lane Adams, too? We'd like you to take him with you.
Yeah.
So Lane Adams, another friend of – he's actually another guy that wants to be a friend of the program. I've had it set up to interview him and just never really gotten it together. Yeah. We're going to have a whole bunch with the tripod this preseason, and it just never worked out. And it would have worked out this coming offseason had I stayed in Arizona. But we'll still probably get some stuff with those guys before it's all said and done.
His last 2 months, he's been really good. You know, in June and July, he's slugging over 500. So, pretty
and
darn good.
Speaking of the tripod, the last remaining member, not in Northwest Arkansas, right? At this point, is Bubba Starling. Is that right?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Lane Adams and Bubba Starling. So he's 2 steps behind being in Lexington still. And we'll just put this in our pocket so we don't have enough time to talk about it tonight, but we should just put this in the vault for a later show of Dayton Moore saying in a recent article on the Star that Bubba Starling was right where they want him, hitting 215 in low A, turning 21 in less than a month. So that's out there. We'll talk about it more, a little bit more in depth next show, though.
Jeff, did you have any other closing thoughts?
No, not really. I think the Zimmer news is really encouraging because I was thinking about this on the ride home, actually. Mike Strider's been lights out. I was just looking at some of his game logs, not the last game he started, but the one before. He did 7 innings, no walks, and 13 strikeouts. I mean, the dude has just been on fire. So That's phenomenal. And putting him in Northwest Arkansas at this point, I mean, if he's really figured it out and he just dominates in Northwest Arkansas, then, you know, maybe in the last month of the season he gets bumped up to Omaha. I doubt they do it. They'll probably keep him in Northwest Arkansas for the rest of the year. But they've always kind of wanted him on the fast track. The point being,
yep.
I think if he dominates in Northwest Arkansas, then you're looking at a situation where it's not unreasonable to think both he and Yordano Ventura could be ready by May of next year to give some valuable major league time to this organization. And that is key. Go ahead.
You finish your thought. I'm sorry, I jumped in there too quick.
I was going to say, with Irvin Santana leaving one way or the other, whether he's traded in the next month or whether he leaves because his contract is up, Wade Davis struggling, Luis Mendoza struggling, Bruce Chinn, his contract will be up. I highly doubt the Royals sign him, but then again, you never know.
Yeah.
So you basically
never say never.
You're going into 2014, you've got James Shields and Jeremy Guthrie and a bunch of question marks, and that's Danny Duffy's included in that because even if he's fully healthy, he still had some problems before he got injured that he needed to work on, such as pitch efficiency and things like that. So there's a lot of question marks in this rotation for 2014 and well, the rest of the year too. But point being, if you can answer some of those questions with top flight prospects like Yordano Ventura and Kyle Zimmer, then all of a sudden 2014 starts to look a lot different. I'm not gonna pick them to win more than 78 games because I said it on this show I wouldn't do it.
Right, you're not allowed now.
But it looks a little bit more positive. But of course, I say that every year. But I'm just this is kind of what the Royals have been building towards in terms of. I really think the James Shields move was looking more towards 2014 when players like Kyle Zimmer and Yordano Ventura would be ready. So we'll see what happens. But that's really encouraging news because Kyle Zimmer. It was discouraging that he was struggling, and now that he's kind of cleaned things up and looks a lot better, hopefully he can just kind of zoom through the system like we all thought and be the player that they drafted at number five. So hopefully it's encouraging news.
Yeah.
And all that sound I'm sure you just heard that sounded like me muffling my mic, that was apparently not only my fiance but my kitten also have decided that I need to wrap this show up because she just tried to rip my headset off. So
that's nice. Oh.
There you go.
Ain't love grand.
So, my Twitter feed blows up. Patrick Corbin just entering the All-Star game, so my Arizona following is going crazy right now. Hopefully, my Royals following is going to get to do it three times tonight. As this game gets a little farther in, and we'll get to see the batters change because they're supposed to go three innings unless they get some sort of injury, like some wuss did to play second base for a team in a big city. God, I hate him. Anyways, I'm sorry, I digress.
You're new to the show.
Yeah, top of the fourth, no runs, two hits by the American League, nothing by the National League. It's been a pretty decent pitcher's duel between the five guys that have been in so far. So. On that note, because we've gotten closing thoughts from both guys, thank you everybody for listening. Send us those emails, KansasCityBaseballBall@gmail.com. Get you your free tellies. Those that have wrote me letters and send me your address, I'll get it. And as always, Jack, whenever you're going to be in Kansas City again, just let me know. I'll take care of you. Until next week, for Mike and Jeff, I'm Troy. Go Royals. What you trying to be yourself for?